This meeting is now being recorded.
And preceded our exercise by, or preceded, with Stan's project up here, is four of them at this point. So the Getting Your Creative Juices Flowing, if you're one of them, need this for sure, because he's already responded to the doc, but if you haven't taken a look at Stan's,
can you read that out loud? I can't see his computer.
Project list. Yeah, that's what I was about to do. I'm just going to briefly go over the projects, and hopefully they're well enough defined that I'm going to repeat them, and it's going to Stan's going to agree that I have correctly described them, because that will mean that you've done a good job of writing them down. Someone else can read the same thing. Well, it's a question, I guess. We'll see how this goes. So I think, Stan, you proposed two projects. I'm not sure quite where to put between our various questions. I think they probably touch on the intersection of price competition and non-price competition, which are these general sort of market structure and market share questions. So one project that Stan has described is basically to calculate eight firm concentration ratios at HHIs. So for those of us that were paying attention in our intro to markets and competition, those are measures used by economists to help figure out the lay of the land in terms of competitiveness in a market. So compute those three numbers for six different sort of sets of PLDs. Sets of participants, market participants. So the first would be compute those numbers for all new CLD registries.
New CLD
registries, yeah. I guess if there happened to be a new CCPLD, we wouldn't want to get that thrown in. Anyway, the new GCLD registries, so specifically the CLDs, presumably standing in from this recent round, right? Yeah, okay, so new CLD registries from this recent round. Do the same computation for all GCLD registries, including the legacy ones. Then do the same computation, but looking at the registrars competing within the new GCLD registries. And then do the same computation again for the registrars competing in all GCLD registries. I suspect there's not a very big difference between... Oh, but you're saying the number of registrations that the registrars have?
Yeah, that's the registrations. And, of course, the footnote says if an entity operates more than one registry, for example, we would combine the shares of their respective registries and calculate the concentration. This is very much like what Nidos Group did.
Okay. And same for registrars, presumably, since some of them have common ownership as well.
This is their table two in their original report.
Okay, and that's just, do they compute registrar concentration or just
table two is registration shares across registry operators.
Right, okay.
And then they have table three, registration shares across registrars.
Okay.
This is computing registration shares or that H?
They did shares.
They just did shares, and what I'm proposing is a number of summary statistics using the share data. This is just the raw share data.
Okay, so but we would use that squared, that
there are at least three things you can do with these data. You can calculate the four-firm concentration ratio. You can calculate the eight-firm concentration ratio, which are fairly standard measures, and you can calculate the HHI using these data. So these essentially, they calculated the raw numbers that are needed to calculate those statistics. I'm suggesting that we do some summary statistics for these data.
So for each of these subheadings, we would expect three numbers to be
correct.
Is this the analysis group to calculate or we calculate?
That's TBD. So right now we're just deciding what the projects are, and then we'll work with staff to figure out who's going to do it.
Okay.
Well, probably in this case, analysis group already has all the data in the spreadsheet, so it would be pretty simple for them to do this. So I would say it probably makes sense for them to do this.
Well, if possible, I think, I hope Sam would agree, if possible, I would prefer that we do the calculation. At least, well, having Sam to participate in the calculations.
Yes, that's fine. I think I appreciate your volunteering to do the calculations. I really do. But I think we'd better have them do it at our direction.
I think for these particular ones, it probably doesn't matter that much because these are pretty mechanical calculations. As we get to some of the other projects, this will actually be quite a bit of work. And so we may decide that the UC members probably may not have the cycles in order to build the spreadsheets or the knowledge of the appropriate
methodologies. What I would say is that ultimately, AEG is not responsible for the conclusion we are. So,
they're probably responsible for the gathering of facts, though.
Right. Well,
and an HHI is more like factual information when all is said and done than an interpretation.
Right. So, I think the goal is we will get these facts laid out, and then
and
the next stage after that is for us to then draw inferences from the data that we're asking for.
Okay. Well, I sort of believe that there's always an issue to what extent the data collected or the calculation can be relied upon. So, having a look inside is always better.
Sure. I think this gets back to the notion that we want to figure out how to engage in analysis groups if we were outsourcing this calculation.
A friend of mine is one of the
Let's go around that
the Greek
No, it's recorded.
That's why you want to do this in Greek.
I actually think that it would be useful in all of these discussions we have with them to have somebody, Mike and probably Lisa, be closely involved in what they do because we don't want to impose burdens on them that are not covered by their contract.
And extend the contract where necessary.
We need extra resources. So it's not something that it's a tripartite activity.
I gather if there's work that we can figure out for them to do in June, we have basically more money than we're possibly going to be able to spend. So anything we can get them to do really fast is desirable.
Takes a while to contract's done, though. So you better decide very, very fast.
Well, we're hopefully maybe today. All right, so picking up on this, so the registrar concentration data, and then do the same thing for new CLDs and CLDs for back-end providers.
Correct. And I think that the only source of back-end data that I know of, and tell me if this is right, Lisa, is the NGTLD data. You have back-end data, too?
I shared that with
you. You send us so much good stuff that it's hard to know where the really good stuff is.
What I did was put together, I think this was David Taylor's suggestion, when we were discussing the options for registries, for back-end providers for registry. So I mapped all of the registries to the back-end providers and what regions they were in.
Is that something that an analysis group is going to do?
We have it.
Are they going to do the calculation? They contemplate that as part of their study plan?
I don't think so. We didn't do that in the last report.
Okay. I know we didn't. Yeah.
So that's not something we requested of them as of now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a two to be added.
So Dan, at the end of this, if we were to complete this project, we would end up with 18 numbers. Expense think I can still do that math. And those numbers would give us, for each of these sub-areas, would give us a rough sense of how concentrated the new GTLD market was, the overall GTLD market, the registrars operating within those markets.
And just to be clear, that's correct. Assuming that is those things are markets, so they are predicated on the notion that if that is the market, that describes concentration within it.
All right, there. All right, so that's one project. Just stands to find. We could tweak that or do that alone. See how we do it. That seems like a pretty simple project. Another. In order to make this fit on a post-it, I have to do some definition. So what I see is that N equals number of domains in new GTLDs. But anyways, now there's a market share calculation that stands proposed, which is four computations. The first is to look at divide that by the total number of domains in all GTLDs. So I would just say, you know, back in the day we had ComNet, BizOrg, whatever. Now we have these new ones. What fraction of the total share of GTLDs?
It's actually what share of the I got it right. This is project one.
This is number one.
This is
one.
It's that's fine. That's correct.
But excuse me. That presumes a constant margin. And theoretically, if you have growing number of internet users and growers, you should be able to compare not only the expansion, but and look at also the expanded number of
users. In percentage terms.
Yeah, so this would say
okay. In terms of the
new GTLDs are 4% of all GTLDs or something like that.
Okay.
But right, you could be the percentage of new.
So we're going to, that is proposed. That's
okay,
one
I've
of the
seen
other
that
things.
Somewhere. Yeah. Got that data somewhere.
So then the second one is to look at the number of new TLDs and divide that by the number of GTLDs, all GTLDs plus CCTLDs.
Right,
so
registration.
Yeah, this is the number of domains registered. So Stan says registrants, but I think what you mean, Stan, is not individuals, which is what a registrant is, but a
registration.
Number of domains.
Yeah, but what does Nielsen mean when they're doing a quote registered survey?
They are surveying individuals.
So one individual
were self-reported as having domain name registration.
So there could be two different entities that.
No, so one entity, one registrant, can have multiple.
Yeah, I understand that.
Right.
This is counting the number of registrations.
Right, the number of domains.
Remember, domains, yeah.
Right, yeah. We'll have to, at some point we're writing this all down, we'll have to agree on terminology.
I agree.
But I'm saying domains here.
Right.
Okay, so number of domains in the new TLDs divided by the GTLDs plus the CCTLDs. So basically the universe of domains. The number of new GTLDs over the universe of domains.
Okay.
And then the third one is the number of new GTLDs divided by the number of new registrations that were performed in the
legacy
TLDs plus the number of new TLDs. So over the so it's really the number of new TLDs divided by the number of new registrations in GTLDs that have happened
in the lifetime of the new TLDs.
Right.
Sort of what's the take up of the new guys of the increment?
Right. Where are the sales being made now?
Of the additions. Remember, these are all these are all net numbers.
Right.
So if somebody goes in and out, we don't know that. All we know is the total amount that they have at any given point in time.
Right.
If somebody drops out and is replaced by somebody else, that's zero.
So we actually could use the ICANN data to dig into the not into the in and out numbers. Because their transactional data that differentiates between new registrations and renewals.
Correct. It's not here.
Correct. So we could make another post next to this and say we might also want to look at, this is where in a minute we're all going to come up with additional ideas. We could come up with additional ideas to look at doesn't work to write sideways. I'm not going to do it, but we could write next to this. We could say look at the net change, look at percentage of transactions or something like that.
Can somebody describe me exactly what these data show? The data you're talking about?
The ICANN report?
Yes.
Yeah. I can tell you, but so every month registry operators submit a report to ICANN, and it includes a bunch of things, but the...
Including the CCTLD?
No,
just
the GTLD.
The link in the chat? I don't have one, but
includes a bunch of stuff, but the things that we'll care about probably are the transaction reports. And the transaction reports are roughly, here's the number of each type of transaction that occurs. And the transactions are new domain registration, renewal, deletion, I think transfers are counted as a transaction as well, which is uninteresting. Well, it could be interesting to us, but not for registry volume numbers. That just means within the TLD, it's a domain moving around between registrars. So that could tell us something about the registrar market, but not about the registry market.
So if, for example, a domain had just as many tell us something about the ins and outs.
Correct.
So what's a good statistic for that? Something like the turnover rate, but I'm not sure exactly.
Right, so one thing we talked about before was like the renewal, what's the renewal rate look like in new TLDs versus legacy TLDs.
But that doesn't tell you that because that's only 1 month of data, right? Only if some number come up for renewal in that period.
Right.
And
I think you could back into it somehow, but it would be a little complicated. Because you know most registrations are 1 year, and I think the transaction report would actually tell you the amount of extra years that were registered, so you would know 12 months after an initial batch of registration what the number of renewals you're expecting would
be. May not be right, but it's a simple thing to do would just be to use the denominator be the total number in that registrants in that domain,
mm-hmm.
and the numerator for two different numbers would be, one of them would be the percentage that got renewed, and another number would be the percentage that
hold up a transaction report from if you want to take a look at it.
But I'm just trying to think of a statistic that would be useful. So it would just be basically this would be the net, the gross numbers.
And what is
your
transaction
report?
Yeah,
suppose we had a domain with 100 registrants
right.
times zero.
Right.
In the next period, 20 dropped out. There should be 10 dropped out and 20 new guys came in. That would show up as 110 in the second period.
Right.
But we wouldn't know whether that was.
Right. But when we looked at the ICANN report.
That would tell us whether that's a result of 20 additions and 10 deletions.
Correct.
That might be an interesting number.
Yeah. So we'll add that in a minute. We'll figure out how to capture that. But that might be another interesting thing to add. But in any case, as proposed right now, it's the number of new registrations and new TLDs divided by the new registrations and legacy TLDs plus the new registrations and TLDs. So what fraction of new GTLD registrations that have happened since this program started happened in the new GTLD? And then there's
net,
correct. What fraction of the growth in the TLD space is really what this is about? And then the fourth one is the number of domains in the new GTLD is divided by the same thing, but including CCTLD as well.
Right.
So the growth in the total domain space.
Spoke during the lunch about number of CCTLDs. So if center cannot provide us more than list of 10 biggest CCTLDs, we can go direct to the websites of most European CCTLDs, and they are publishing on a daily basis number of registrations.
Yeah, we may need to... At some point, we're not going to be able to get all the data for CCTLD. So either we or someone else will have to estimate what the long tail.
But that's a good idea.
Yeah,
no, I agree. I'm just saying we can look at what we can do is probably look and see. Like I know the very largest CCTLDs are much, much, much larger than the very smallest CCTLDs. Obviously, like DE is tens of millions, whereas
.tk
is also an anomaly, right?
Yeah, but that's an anomaly.
It's an anomaly.
It's a complete anomaly.
And it's really more like a GTLD.
Exactly.
Than a CCTLD.
What's .tk?
Turkmenistan?
Again, I guess I don't know how well I'm articulating this point, but there's the notion of a global competitor and a regional competitor.
Yeah.
And so a .tv or a .tk might be a global competitor and substitute, but other things like .uk is a regional, or .de is a regional competitor.
This particular set of calculations assumes the geographic market is worldwide. That's an implicit assumption.
Right.
It doesn't make the distinction.
Yeah, in this case, it doesn't matter. So we get look at, in some other places, we'll probably want to lump some of these anomalous CCTLDs in with the GTLDs in the case, more like GTLDs. There may be a data source I can get on this that would be helpful, which is Google Search treats certain CCTLDs as GTLDs, because usually so Columbia is a really good example. For a long time, .co was, you could only, like I said, you could only get it in, if you were in Columbia or a bunch of rules. Right? And then at some point, they're like, oh, this is kind of like .com, because like, there's not a lot of these if we took out all these dumb restrictions. And so then they just sort of marketed it as a .com competitor. And so Google Search went from treating it and saying, like, oh, stuff in .co is probably related to Columbia, to like, oh, this is just another GTLD.
Did we get that list?
I don't know if we published that list. I'll see if it's published. If it's published.
Or if we can sign something.
I'll see if we can get that list made available. Okay, so those are two just general market structure projects that Stan's proposed. On the topic of price competition, Stan's proposed a project about price analysis, which is a three and a half pronged project. The first is to look at we're trying to establish what the effects of new GTLDs were on prices in legacy GTLDs. So in order to figure that out, we look at the percent change of price in each legacy GTLD since the start of the new GTLD period.
The before and after analysis.
But the before and after. So yeah, percent change, right? So yeah, so we get the old price and the current price and
yeah.
Do it the difference.
And well, Dan knows how to do it before we do, but you want to be able to compare what happens to the prices on the legacy by the introduction of the new GTLD.
That's right. That's what he's proposing.
Exactly.
Look at the legacy prices, the change in legacy prices based on
the introduction of the new GTLD.
And there's a 1A here, which is look to see if the price cap was involved, if there's
exactly.
A price cap involved.
Not only that, you have the advantage, if I'm not mistaken, that the legacy GTLDs are all sold in dollars, are they not?
I
think they are. But, I mean, that's the vast majority of the ones. So you have a relatively easy comparison.
No.
Whereas if you get into other currencies...
The dispersion is what makes it difficult, though.
No, this is wholesale.
Yeah.
Registry prices.
Registry, yes.
So now, just to make clear, just to anticipate Kelly's point, this is just a calculation. We don't know that the introduction of the new GTLDs was the only factor...
That's a different
whatever,
that's cause and effect.
Separate factor.
That's
separate
right.
Issue. This is just a calculation to see what happened. I suspect that how many of the legacy GTLDs are price capped?
I think all of the ones that sell to the public. So I don't think like Gov or
Dotmail
have price caps.
The reason I ask that is if that's true, it's entirely possible that all those changes will be zero.
Right, like your hypothesis. So I don't think that's true because I think net has been operating under its price cap for a while.
But if the price cap is binding before and after, then in fact you should observe no change.
So it's like on COM, you would imagine that it's COM is always priced at the cap.
Exactly.
So
I'm sorry. One other thing, I understand that there have been some permissions that the cap has been changed for some of the GTLDs during this period.
Correct. So
how
like
do you control for that?
COM and NET have a built-in ratchet of some sort.
I don't know the best way in this brainstorming session to expand this, but
so what you should do is write it down on
I guess I can do that.
Sorry, may I remind everyone to put your name so that it can be transcribed
right.
Later.
I have a question. Yes, can I speak here?
Richard?
Yeah. I think with this issue was mentioned some time ago, say, for the overall operation of a registrar, okay, the registration fee
for to get a domain name, is that significant or insignificant? And according to some economic theory, that if a very insignificant cost for somebody, and that would be very make it very insensitive to the pricing. Well, so in that case, well, the price competition or not, would it be important for the end user or registrant or not? Or basically, they don't even care.
So
whether it's $1 or $10 or $100, does it matter at all?
A good project to figure out the answer. That's an interesting question.
But that's the data will show it. Let us suppose it's true that nobody cares about the wholesale price. Doesn't make any difference. That is, the elasticity demand is not changed by the entry of new GTLDs.
Well,
and let's just leave out the price cap issue. Then in that world, you should expect little or no change in the wholesale price in response to the competition.
Well,
or entry. And the data will show you. Tell you that.
Well, I want to continue.
Let me just propose. So that's an interesting. So
yeah.
We're trying to come up with projects.
I don't know. But I want to complete what I said. Well, for one application, it's very price sensitive, which is speculation. If it's $1 versus $100 for the same kind of investments, they can, it's a tremendous difference by 100 times. So
this is the wholesale price.
Whatever. Wholesale price would translate to retail price anyway.
But we're not going to observe.
No, not necessarily.
I agree. It's not necessarily, but obviously it's more likely than unlikely. Well, a wholesale price translating to the retail price. But whatever I say, no matter wholesale or retail, what I would like to say is this, the probably, according to my understanding, the most price-sensitive would be shown, price sensitivity would be shown, is speculation, especially for China.
So I was going to say, the way we could translate that into a project, potentially, would be to see the correlation between the price, the wholesale price, or the retail price. Probably the retail price is better than the wholesale price.
Okay.
The average retail price
versus
the volume of registrations.
And
especially you could try to break it out.
The parklet.
Parklet. That would be a good project. You should write that down.
Let me go back to this project for just 1 second.
Sure.
About the price caps for just a moment.
Yeah.
If this would be an interesting result. I don't think we're going to observe it. Suppose we have a collection of legacy GTLDs, not price capped. It would be interesting if a bunch of them had no price change in response to GTLD entry, and some of them had some or even a large increase. And that would suggest that the new GTLDs are competing with some but not all of the legacy GTLDs with respect to price. And that would be a result that you could get. My guess is you won't get that. But this is designed to say, very straightforward question, what happened to the prices of the wholesale prices of legacy GTLDs after the entry of the new GTLDs?
Yeah. Although, don't forget that one of the things, it's Megan, by the way, that we were listening to this morning in the Nielsen expose was that the new GTLDs were more likely to be taken up in areas that weren't using the legacy.
That's a user survey, not a registrant survey.
Exactly. But that must also have some implications
We'll see.
So this is just designed to capture a basic fact in what happened to the prices of the legacy GTLDs, the wholesale prices, after the entry.
Yeah, clear. I don't object to it. I think it's a good idea to look. And then we'll see what the what the implications are.
The next, the next question is much harder, which is whatever happened, why did it happen?
Why,
right.
Exactly.
All right, so next price thing Sam says to look at is the mean, median, top quartile, and bottom quartile prices of the new GTLD register. So this is just across, let me make sure I understand this, Sam. So across all the registries that Analysis Group has price data for, what's the average price?
It's various measures of the distribution.
Sure, sure. So this would just be four numbers total. Is that right? So it'd be like average mean $18, median $20.
They're table six.
Okay, but they're already doing it.
They did do it before, yes.
So presumably they're going to reproduce most of the tables from the previous study anyway. All right, and then number three, is this mean new GTLD price minus mean legacy GTLD?
This is, yeah, the idea is to ask the question, are the wholesale prices of the new guys different from, and in what way different from, the wholesale prices of the incumbents?
On average.
On average. Right. Maybe other ways to measure that, but that was a simple way to compare it.
Right. This one here may be perturbed by the price
estimator. That's correct.
The price estimator, like that. I guess the other question is it worth trying to look for outliers at all in analysis
like this? That's why, well,
I guess that's what medium would help with.
Medium, top and bottom quartile are designed to capture that.
And the outliers are.
And you could take my project 3 sub 3, which just compares the means. And compare medians or compare other,
right,
measures.
Right.
So, see, a real outlier just might go to the 95th percentile and 5th percentile.
Or something like that. I mean, you get the $25,000 ones or whatever.
Yeah, you might want to get top five.
Right.
They could have done that with their data in Table 6.
Right.
So, we could potentially supplement the exact measures.
Yeah.
Well, I think, well, once we have, whether we have or they have collected the right data, all there could be hundreds of different calculations and
millions.
Yeah, it is. Right, exactly. So, do we want to be exact on all the calculations? Because whether it's on spreadsheets, it's like instant. So, do we want to?
So
pinpoint every single calculation right now, or because we can easily add those things.
So I agree with that general sentiment that we can tweak the exact thresholds or numbers. I think what we want to do is establish, we want to do something to look at the general parameters of price dispersion, right? Price characteristics. That seems like a reasonable project to stand out, like some specific measures we might want to use, and we could tweak those later on if we thought that was interesting or useful. But if we didn't have this written down, we might not collect all the right pricing data in order to be able to
The Analysis Group may have their own ideas about other ways to do this since they're familiar with the data.
Yep. All right, so that's the registry pricing. And then the last one I've written down so far is registrar competition, which is like question number three.
On the second one, was a non-price competition?
So far, there are no projects proposed specifically related to non-price competition.
No.
So you guys should try to think of projects that would help us figure out whether non-price competition
is. I just talked about the price sensitivity may not be that significant. So, in other words, if there's competition, probably the price competition will be more important than the price competition if the end user are not price sensitive at all.
Right.
So, can we come up with something in parallel to the price competition?
Yeah, you should figure that out.
We're joking a little bit, but that's something we need to,
any of these sheets of paper that there's no projects attached to, we need to make up some projects. projects. Otherwise, we're not going to have any
answer those questions.
To help answer those questions.
And what we're getting are good examples of what those questions should be formed.
This
like.
Is just purely, we're using Stan to, he's done some work. We all need to do some more work. But we're going to use him to see our thinking and give some examples of projects that we could do.
Yeah, but the problem here for MemPress, the problem is an ads group, what kind of data are they collecting?
This is a much harder problem. This is much harder to describe.
Yeah. So we first need to define.
Are they always parallel projects, or are they somewhat controls on the existing projects? In other words, one of the things that you keep mentioning and that we are a little bit concerned about is the level of diversity of prices, even for a single TLD. Is there a way to look at the non-price competitive aspects of those registrars, bundled services or something like that, to use those as a control to help equalize?
This is a tentative about registries primarily. So the question.
Oh, I thought we had moved over to registrars. I'm sorry, I was already over there.
But this is a harder question. We know there only used to be 20 names, and there are now 1,200. So in some sense, we know there's more quote non-price competition.
Right.
But how do we measure it?
Right.
Non-price competition is that for registries or registrars?
Probably both. But let's talk about registries for just a moment.
Okay.
It's not easy. How would you characterize? Well, I thought about it. Obviously, there's a lot more non-price competition. There's a whole lot more variety than there was before.
Right.
Does anybody know of at least one example of registries providing non-price competition?
Yeah, security.
Sure.
Security.
Okay. No, but their names are.
Yeah, the names themselves
are non-price competition.
Right.
They didn't all call themselves A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I.
Jonathan could have bought a .com. For his photography site, but instead decided to get a big shot photography for some reason, right? And
well, that was one of the things. I mean, and we've talked about this study, and I don't know whether it wasn't to the donuts.
Yeah, I found the data that I can share with us. So that might be one way to look at the non-price competition. Donuts has some data that says I think 60% of the people that registered in the donut CLDs at the moment they registered, you could have registered. So let's say Big Shots Photography, I think photography would go on to CLD.
Right.
Jonathan could have registered BigShotsPhotography.com, and instead he registered BigShots.Photography.
Let's
cost more money.
This is Stan again, obviously.
Yeah.
Let's suppose that college right, there's not much price competition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then the question, let's go back to the first chart. The question is, well, why did people adopt names other than .com,
right?
Some fraction of the new registrants are using other new domains. It must be because for non-price reasons they prefer them.
Right.
So in some sense, the measure of the benefits of non-price competition have to do with the number of, essentially, the percentage of the increment or the overall market share captured by the new guys.
Sure. Unless it's cheaper.
Unless it's cheaper. That's why I said for the hypothetical, there's no price effects.
Right.
So that what you're observing is the effect of non-price factors. So right, what you're saying is what we observe over there is the combined effect of any price and non-price effects. If we can eliminate prices as a significant factor, then the result is non-price.
That's logical.
Is that logical?
Perfectly. Perfectly logical.
All right, I'm going to jump to registrar. So I put up the donuts thing here.
What does it contain?
I'll send it around later, but it shows people could have chosen the .com and they chose one of these other TLDs.
It's the name issue.
Right, so for a reason, presumably other than cost, because all the donuts TLDs are more expensive than .com, they chose a string that they could have gotten the exact equivalent with .com at the end.
And
we presume that's mostly for non-price reasons.
And now we're at Jonathan's point to number three, which is how do we characterize non-price competition of both forms among registrars?
Right. So amongst registrars, Stan proposed two sub-projects. One is, once again, going back to the four-firm, eight-firm concentration method, measures and HHI, do that amongst registrars this per TLD.
I'm not sure this is universal, but the number of registrars, the registries that I've looked at, is very large.
Right.
Like there were a couple of dozen, 15 to 20 for most of them. For an economist, that looks like a pretty competitive market.
Right.
On the other hand, the distributions, I think, tend to be skewed, so that even though there are 20 registrars, a couple may have most of the registrations.
Right.
So that's why I want to look at the concentration measures.
And this other, you've already proposed that we look at the concentrations for registrars across all the new GTLDs.
Correct.
So this will tell us about the general landscape, and now this will tell us
by domain.
Right. And then, secondly, a concentration between mean and median registrar markup, which the correlation between that and each measure of registrar concentration.
Yes.
So if we see some TLDs are more competitive by TLDs that have an effect on the pricing that registrars are able to.
Right, and with the obvious caveat that what fee price is not easy to define given the wide dispersion of prices.
Right. But now that we have pretty good we're looking at mean and median.
Yes, that's a way of trying to overcome.
We now have a spreadsheet that will allow us to compute that.
Right. Correct.
All right. So Stan has a couple other projects proposed as well, which we'll put up here. But this is the type of these projects make sense to people. This is the type of projects that we want to pursue. But you'll see, so we have a lot of empty pieces of paper, and we don't have very many posts per piece of paper. So I'm going to propose that we all put on our thinking hats for 15 minutes. And try to come up with some more projects, and then we'll talk through them for a little bit, and then see if there's still obvious gaps, and we can maybe try to work together as a group to talk through it if there's obvious gaps. But spend 15 minutes putting your ideas on your post-it
gaps.
Projects. What other projects can we do?
Do we need more projects? I'm just wondering, again,
well,
we're halfway through our year.
Questions that we identified we wanted to answer, so the question is, we'll have to drop the questions if we don't come up with projects.
No, but not new projects. I think what you want is, how do we answer these questions?
And that is what a project is in our current terminology.
A project is either collecting data or taking some existing data that we have and doing some particular analysis on it.
It's a greater specificity.
Yeah.
Right now we just have a bunch of data. And we don't know what to do with that, right? So what would we do with that data in order to come up with that?
I think we can already eliminate this. It's very simple. Just actually coming up with the TLDs for regions and for languages. They are known.
Well, that assumes that the registrants, I guess, think that they're it might just be we need to do a registrant survey. And ask people, you speak Thai, now there's Thai TLDs. Do you think you have better choice than you did before? If they do, then problem solved. But if they say, no, I've never heard of those, or no, I would never buy one of those, they're stupid.
So you want us to
look at it from that angle, if it's available.
That would be fine. It might be just say, we want to use these questions in a consumer survey to answer the question. But I think we want to make sure for each of these questions, we can tie it back to some analysis of the data that we're going to use to try to propose an answer to the question.
We've left out one thing that's still pending, and that's the various projects to define narrower markets. And we never have settled.
So that's going to happen after this
conversation.
Okay. So I'm hoping to get to that in half an hour.
Maybe we should have a question related to restrictions.
So that is, there is segmentation and regulation. The regulation would be the restriction. Is it valuable to consumers? That's the only question that we use. Now, the safeguards group, they may have other questions related to restriction.
Yeah.
But for our purposes, it's just, are they useful?
But in principle, reasonable you could go back and everything we had on the first three things and see whether there are differences between domains that have restrictions and those that don't. Correct. That's another way to cut the market.
Yeah, I thought from perspective of competition, not related to trust and favor. So
correct.
Which registrant can apply and register, I don't know, some domain. So it's
that would be
close to competition. Okay, but
similar to what Dan was just saying.
Within question four, we should add, I don't know.
I think it's separate. It's another way to. There's lots of ways you could cut the stuff for one, two, or three. Photo suggested a different way of treating the open CCTLDs, right? But what you're suggesting is still another way to cut the data, which is to treat the PLDs with restrictions differently from the others and see whether their behavior is different.
Okay.
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
And I just have a question on number five. It says, have the benefits of choice exceeded the cost?
Yeah.
We're talking about consumer choice here.
The benefits of the choice of the consumer could be in either registrar or end user.
Because theoretically, for a user, the expansion of choice has no cost whatsoever. By definition. Because whether I go to .eu or .de or .berlin, the cost to me is zero.
But you could have a cost
in
of,
a sense of
someone could set up like a phishing site on Google.eu.
That's a safety and security issue.
I still have a cost.
The cost was defensive registration.
If Google registers Google dot whatever in order to prevent
topic that you guys noted was, can registrants get better domains in new, better domains
well,
in the new
domain? That's one of the benefits,
yeah.
And that's the cost, obviously. But confusion could be a cost, for example. It might even be that when you go to register, you see this longer list of
I'm always confused.
Of names, and confusion. I don't even measure it for the quantify that cost. But you're right, probably most of the benefits go to, I think if you got phished as a result of someone setting up a malicious site on a new TLD that was confusing, you might say that the cost of the new TLD program.
True.
To a consumer.
Absolutely.
So, but you're right. That many of the costs might be actually on third parties, right? Like on people that are not consumers.
Which are tasked with looking answering questions like that.
Some
right, and that was the whole discussion we had with Larry, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not saying the question is wrong. I'm just saying we have to attack it in the right way so that we're comparing the choice of the user with the cost of the user and the choice of the registrant with the cost of the registrant. That's all.
But this is another.
It may not be one to one.
Additional issue, which is the one that Jonathan was pushing this morning, which is, okay, whatever idea you have about this, how could we define a quantitative project?
Exactly.
That would permit us to answer it. And that's
get the evidence.
That's much
absolutely.
Harder.
No,
exactly. It's harder to define the question.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also likely to be hard to get the data. But as we're struggling here, it's hard to think exactly. I think the questions have seemed the most straightforward, the ones I could figure, could answer straightforwardly.
And it already come up in the previous economic report.
Maybe not, but at some point, absolutely.
Okay. Why don't you guys do your thinking and then
right.
I can talk about what we have.
Okay.
Under the category, if you want to be quiet time. But.
All right.
I actually love thoughts. Could you show them to me?
I mean, I thought you'd
be
the talk. Like,
would
no.
you be willing to show them to me in a private showing?
Like, sure. I don't know if I like that word. Okay.
So if we can put it up here.
Okay.
By the way, folks, just so you know, you now have...
You can do either one. You can either modify Dan's existing thing, just put up a post-it next to it, or you can create a whole new... So I just stole Wado's idea for regions and languages. I said, let's just do, make sure in our registrant survey we ask registrants in those regions or languages, hey, now you can register in these new PLDs. Does that give you more choices? I mean, it obviously gives them more choices. Are those valid choices that you might consider?
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Then that's the one.
It's the more detail about what's
general question everybody keep working. Aliza, what is it?
We got the NIMSTAT data,
the DM prices.
Yeah.
That's what I sent to you.
Right. In theory, if I had the bond data for that, I could in fact look for unique strings and look for prices.
They didn't give us string per string. They gave us list price at the TLD level. This is the DM prices file.
Oh, this is the one I saw. This is retail.
This is what they sent.
This is retail.
It is retail.
This is very much like the published data.
Yeah.
But
this is what they sold to analysis.
It's in a much more convenient form because it's already in a spreadsheet, so I understand why they would want to use it. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty comprehensive.
Right.
I think that's fine.
It's price per registrar.
Exactly, each registrar is
right,
cold.
But not a string level. That was the question Jonathan had.
Too hard.
Yeah, I know.
Because one of the things I was exploring, and I think maybe you've shot down in the past, is about the aftermarket. Because the only way to get to that is actually through string compression.
I think that would be very hard to do. That's a very hard analysis. I think you can do that. Windsor, there's a you know, a huge market out there. People saw HIV, the thousands of dollars with this name that I was smart enough to get. I'm not sure I care about that a lot.
Well, the only reason I care is because it's that the reason that people are able to make thousands of dollars is because potentially of a lack of competition. So, like WallStreet.com or something like that.
Let me tell you why I don't care. Let's suppose there's some really valuable stream. And there seems to be sort of two ways that the registry could, which registrar could have an auction, and the entity that the highest value would be the state.
Right.
And the ball would go to the registrar. Okay. Scenario two, Elisa gets it. She sells it to the high bidder. In both cases, the same entity gets it. And the only difference is in one case, it's who gets the booth. But in terms of the allocation, it doesn't make any difference. It's not because of competition, it's because this is a particularly valuable resource for which people who did it, only one of them, and it's going to eventually fetch a high price, but it's going to collect that high price.
But I'm speaking now without the benefit of data, but what have become popular as a general rule in the aftermarket are single dictionary words in the English language in .com, right?
Yeah.
And so they sell for greater than normal retail pricing.
Right.
So the question then becomes, if you're really looking for a price difference, do the price of those things can, so the price of WallStreet.com went for $1 million, Is Wall Street dot Holdings enable the value in that market to drop below $1 million? What I was trying to get at, right? That's the only thing.
There's some things that have to be the same, and some things that can't.
Question is now we have a new GTL.
Yeah. Definitely. So, like, yeah, like, I would make a thousand of them. Security rules, like that. Most of them. So, definitely.
But I could get for half the price.
Yeah, like, UDRP, URS, certain protections have to be the same. And additional. So, like, Donuts has a block list that's called DTML that allows trademark holders to block their names. They don't have to reserve an AR or register like Sunrise, they block it. So that's an extra protection.
If I had the data, here's my thought. And
that's not required.
My thoughts on it. Add string.
So you'll get different
data, string level data. I could look at the new TLDs for unique strings and then compare those transactions.
Sure. Yeah.
That's right.
Right.
So that's the data. I can find these. Right.
You just have to do a lawsuit.
Something.com.
Yeah. Court order.
Yeah.
Very effective.
Right.
And the reason why they don't care if
right.
Never come from the new guys. That'll be a smaller list. Right.
Good local adaptation.
The same string.
Right.
But you don't need to observe before you have to move the reduction of the value of the Python version.
You have to move it here.
You only observe that if, in fact,
that's the regulation.
There's a transaction.
Sure, maybe.
Right.
But there could be other kinds of segmentation.
We'll figure out how to put them in. And now that someone calls you say, gee, I wish I had bought it at, I wish I had waited and bought books.biz or books.whatever. So I've overpaid X post.
No, but that's my point, is that the aftermarket is there is in fact a price list out there for the aftermarket. The things you're talking about represent a small percentage of the aftermarket. Every single word in English is in the aftermarket right now with a price associated with it that isn't going to auction.
So let me ask you if I understand this. We have, before the introduction of new GTLDs, we have this list with books.com and all the others.com stuff.
Right.
Now we have an after of market, right? That makes it be a post introduction of the GTLDs,
mm-hmm.
And now we observe a new set of prices for all those things,
right.
Based on entry.
That's right. I mean, we might have trouble controlling for causation.
No.
But we could jump to a correlative for
like
self-belief.
But that's like, that's a good idea. That's like my change in the wholesale price in response to the entry.
Right.
So I don't know the data as well as you do. So you have a list of prices for as of December 31st, 2013, for a bunch of strings. And you have the same list prices, the same posted prices as of
presumably data where somebody like that could provide us with data at that level that said at this date,
sure, any
cost of strings are for sale and their price, and then we could hear the list of strings. And most of them will collapse. Most of them aren't sold yet.
Oh, gosh, it's going to look good.
Larry is leading a yoga session.
Jordan. There are pictures.
Pardon?
Laureen is leading the group in a yoga session right now. So I'm just telling you, my expectations are now a little higher for your leadership. Alex sent us a picture.
That
we got a picture.
Quality leadership?
That's hilarious.
If you want to lead a relaxation session at the bar, I'm happy to join you.
Oh my gosh.
I prefer my yoga with a martini.
Come.
Sure.
Where do you fit in the hospital?
I'm sorry.
Where will fit in the
hospital? That's like a meta thing.
Okay.
Will it be a hospital?
Oh,
I don't know. That's, by the way, we left out the one that you added. I should have. The one about delayed entry.
Oh, yeah. Where will it fit?
No, I'm not sure where it fits. I think it has to do with entry.
Okay.
You can just put it on the wall somewhere.
But you can explain it better than I can. So.
Right.
already kind of projecting. Or he's doing a filter.
I'll pressure somebody to say, well, how are we going to do it? What's exactly the question?
Right.
What exactly is it? That's the conversation we just had about the, about the secondary market prices. If we push ourselves on that, we'll end up with a list that's already been
more manageable to begin with.
Manageable.
That's right.
And we shouldn't be embarrassed about not being able to answer every question. That's exactly right.
We can list the questions we thought were interesting that we didn't have a chance to get done.
Or the data were not available to do.
Right, right.
I don't think that's so efficient. I mean, this is progress.
That's right.
We're going to be in here.
You're still in here.
Yeah.
What's that mean? Everyone else coming?
You're going to be in your sub-team for the remainder of the day.
Oh, we are.
Yeah.
Oh,
and there's
great.
A little half-hour wrap-up at the end of the day
all together
in the
room.
So when that's
five.
Five, that's right.
Yeah.
So from now till five, we're...
We have another celebrity guest with five.
Who's that?
Yeah.
Who is it?
Steve Crocker.
I thought he was coming to the dinner. He's coming to the
All right, so...
So, Denise, can you show us where the date is?
Do we know
what time Steve's going to show up?
Five.
Yeah, all right, so we have more time than I thought.
Sheet.
That's good. And do we have one official break planned between now and five?
I know. So, if you look at the...
It's you to order.
It's somewhere
else. All right.
It's
you to give instructions.
So...
They're looking at these others.
One,
the
other. Okay, it looks like
for
break. 30 minutes. You need another 30 minutes.
During the meeting. During the meeting.
So
for break.
Choice versus competition. I'm looking at the competition among registrars and resellers. This is designed to kind of big market share in the way that it's constructed now.
The question I started with was, are there differences in competitive conditions across registries, differences in registrar competitive conditions that are reflected in some fashion? Are some of them the registrars more concentrated than others? And are there discernible differences in the markups? Based on the extent to which there are more or fewer competitors.
But are the raw numbers of competitors useful in and of themselves as a question of choice? So I have more people to go to, whether I'm choosing to go to them or not.
There is a literature in economics that looks like the following. It's hard to implement here because it's a very interesting price. It basically says the following.
That's how you write this.
Let's compare
to a website.
Yeah.
Airline.
Yeah, that's impossible to read on a fly.
Right? We have price flying between those two cities.
Right.
As the dependent variable.
Right.
And explanatory variables are some measure of how competitive those routes are. Okay?
Right.
And so
yes.
The question is, are prices higher in routes that are less competitive by some definition? And you can use a variety of definitions. Number of competitors, shares of the various firms, concentration ratios, etc. This has been done for lots of industries.
Right.
So my thought was, if we'd already collected all the stuff on concentration among registrars for the same registry, and if we had price data, big if,
right.
Okay, then we could do a regression analysis.
Understood.
That says, are the differences in prices, can they be explained by differences in the concentration among registrars? Now, the main issue might be no, because they're all pretty competitive, in which case you won't find much difference. But this is a doable project.
Right.
Analysis group collected one measure of markup, not the one I would have used, but a measure of markup. But they didn't link that to concentration in that particular
field. And so I'm getting at what, from the standpoint of the vocabulary of the review, may not have an economic analysis foundation, and so maybe we need to work on. Let me finish to the first. I'm not asking. Forget about the question you asked. I'm trying to ask a new one. So this is about choice, which is listed for us as separate from competition. I've heard you in the past say the choice would just be potentially a measure of non-price competition or something like that. But so we sort of dealt with it as availability when we were trying to look at this before, when we were trying to collect metrics for it before. And so the question then becomes, it's sort of a difference between non-price and competition between registrars, which is just, in other words, as a matter of fact, do different communities, different places now have a choice of more places they can get DLDs than they did before? Because a number of so whether or not that led to changes in pricing, like gas stations, is a separate question. But is there in fact more choices for people to go to get?
Is this about registries or registrars?
Registrars.
Why? I thought it sounded like these registries. Or was that wrong?
I'm asking about registrars now.
But the new TLDs came into existence.
And we were trying to see whether or not there was. Oh, I guess it's registries are the new thing that
are
brought about by.
Yeah, the way to think about it is, I guess, we've been asked the question. Okay, I'm in some place, and I
wouldn't have had a new registrar.
I used to have this choice, but simpler version is there were so many registries to choose among, and now there's some new ones. And what I was trying to answer back on one was, what did the new guys capture? Now, I think what you may be saying is, well, maybe we could do that on a more refined basis by saying, okay, do people in Africa have more choices than they did before in a way that's different from what you've observed if you just looked at the world as a whole? I suppose that's one way to interpret what you're saying. I'm not sure what you had in mind.
Yeah, and I'm just trying to get at the distinction between competition and choice. I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out. Is there some raw thing that says that the fact that differences in privacy policies between them, things like that, that I now don't have to go to this one place, and so the names are potentially different, and they have their own. I don't know how to control for that, but do I have more choice as a result now that I could make a choice based on something?
You're right. The names are one possibility.
Right.
Another way to interpret what you're saying might be, do the new GTLEs have different, like, policies
right.
that make
yes.
them
more attractive?
Right.
Is there a place that we could sort of find that?
So that's something we've been trying to figure out a way to capture, because it's really a manual. Great, from looking at every registry. So our data intern has come up with a proposal on how to maybe sample some registries and compare. Maybe what we could do is, if we're going to look at certain markets, take that group of registries in say a geographic market and look at their different policies, and is that something that would differentiate them? There are a lot of different ways we can do that. But there we do have a metric where we're looking at different.
Okay, well, we already have this.
Yeah, I wrote it in non-price.
What's a policy?
Policy.
Yeah. Okay.
User
and policy.
And so how do we? I mean, we can do it in just a second. I'll go through and see what people wrote. And I might have a little bit of the same feedback. We just need to figure out how we're going to translate that into actionable
what
right.
the data
project.
Is
yeah.
and who does it.
Yeah. Right.
I think that's the next step after you set on with people.
What's yeah. the nature of the project that people are doing with the data scrape?
Which?
What you just described.
Well, we haven't actually done it.
Well,
we're not quite sure how to approach it.
Oh.
That's something we should
So the idea would be you'd have to identify, characteristics, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a question of, is there a way to do this quantitatively, and then you're ticking boxes for it has this, this, and this, or is this a qualitative analysis?
You could certainly, this is back to our argument we've been having for a while about how many dimensions you need to characterize. This is back to the market definition issue.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, you do it by regions, by languages.
Exactly.
My friend here says there are an infinite number of characteristics.
Uh-huh.
and unless you explore them all, you can't be sure that you're done.
Well, we're not going to do that.
Who said that?
My friend. No, not you. I said friend.
That's right.
But I don't have time to do an infinite number. I'm not a young man, and
a lot of experience.
You don't have infinite time.
I don't have infinite time. The young guy here has time, so he's going to work on it. But yes, you should try to think about objective characteristics that you can identify, and then I think the best you can. Well, most likely you're going to be able to say, is it in or out? That's probably the easiest thing to do, right? Do they have it or they don't have? Do they have?
The geographically restricted,
or
is it
a restriction based on, you have to be qualified in some fashion, and you would sort of identify those. You might find that
qualifications,
not an infinite number. Right. I recommend against that.
It may
make sense to start from a list of user policies, for example, and then just look, because then looking at 1,000 of those is not the end of the world, right?
Yeah.
But trying to look at 1,000 to find. The ones
but I like the idea of focusing on a sample, maybe a regional sample or something like that. Something where it's narrower. You don't have to look at them all.
Yeah.
And then you guys know a lot about where would you look for information about the policies?
So what we initially did, this is Elisa. We have a We had a set of recommended metrics that had to do with privacy policies, whether they were accessible or not, and I can't remember, I think there was registration policies on that list. So we did a baseline sample of just looking at each registry's policy. So that was easy. That's like a dozen web pages you look at, and you scroll through for these three things, and we ticked off whether they had it or not.
All right.
So but that was broader. It was like, is it easily accessible to find a privacy policy or not? But it was just going to their website.
That's okay, but what was the next step?
Putting it all in a spreadsheet.
Oh, I think, if I understand Dana's suggestion before, would you want to compare the new GTLD with the legacy ones? Is that what you had in mind? Dana? For the restrictions?
Yeah.
Did you have in mind, did the new GTLDs look different from the old ones in terms of restrictions? Was that the question you were asking?
Yeah, also between new GTLDs.
Among the new GTLDs.
Yeah. But one simple thing, if you want to go to the question of did the new GTLDs increase choice, if you want to call it that, say, it would be interesting if they had restrictions that looked different from the restrictions that the legacy guys had.
Right.
That would be an interesting finding.
Yeah, I agree.
And that sounds doable.
All right.
And you have the data. When we have the results
of the data scraping.
When we have the results. No, the whole.
Have I been assigned the brackets yet?
No, we'll get to that by the end. Yeah.
All right. So here's my goal. We're gonna run through what's on the board, see how practical this scheme and how much work it needs to translate it into actual project.
I actually did some of it already.
Then we'll take a break. And we'll come back and talk about market segmentation for our final hour or so. That work? All right. Promote price competition. Compare pre- and post-price list in the aftermarket.
That's Jones.
Right. So the idea here is to look.
So, I mean, the idea is to go to CETO's the example that I think of, right? And if you control for the top of the list, which is these super mega premium names, Wall Street or whatever, that end up going for auction, there is in fact a price list by string that's available, and we could compare two of them, look for the overlapping strings, and then compare percentage deltas between those prices. That's what I was suggesting. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that would tell us whether perhaps.
Right.
It might help inform us whether.
In theory, the aftermarket should be more sensitive from a pricing standpoint because there's no caps.
Yeah.
So caps you're seeing market prices on a continuous basis. It's not like the.
Well, these new the strings that are available in new GCLDs might be better substitutes than were available in the previous market as well. Before, it might be if you were looking, if you could buy book.com, if you wanted book.com, either you would have to buy it in this aftermarket or in the primary market, you can only get, you know, John's Books, DC123.com or something.
Right,
like that.
Right.
That might be a terrible name that you don't really think of substitute at book.com. But now suddenly you can get shop.books or something like that. So maybe that's a better book.shop.
That you're making it a little bit too hard. This is a straightforward price.
Oh, no, yeah. I'm going the next step and saying how we might interpret that data.
Explaining why it might happen.
Right.
But yeah, that's right.
But yes, I'm not saying that we need to do that as part of this.
Fine. Megan wouldn't let you do it anyway.
No. We have a kitten.
All right. So that seems pretty straightforward already. We need to find the data. So we need to find someone with before and after price list. Is the main challenge there. But the actual analysis shouldn't be
easy. Too hard. It's relatively easy.
Yeah.
Have the data long.
Well, it's like I said, every word in the English language dictionary.
Thousand words or billion words or.
I mean, I don't know. A CETA list might have 100,000.
Probably, yeah, I would guess hundreds of thousands.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And so the point is, the overlap is going to be probably 85% between the list then and the list now. Right, and so then we could just look at the delta for each one, and then
some of them would have
average and median
the
delta.
Purchased in the interim.
Right.
That's right.
So I've heard the typical portfolio only sells 2% a year, so we would have seen 4% of them or 5%.
But you'd expect them to mark their price change mark to market more frequently.
They're so the makers are not very good market makers. They're more trying to like pin a tail on a tiger than to.
No, I like that. That's a good idea.
Okay. So that's all we have on price competition, but we also have these Stan's initial projects will probably give us some, maybe not direct insights into price competition overall. The first one, this is Stan's existing projects on price competition. So those are already better documented than the market. Okay, then on non-price
competition. Just 1 second.
Yeah.
I think it's incumbent on us to write these up in paragraphs
correct.
As soon as possible.
Okay.
Because we're going
to... This is Jonathan owes us a write-up.
We're going to give them to somebody else to implement.
Yeah. All right.
And we'll hand them to the staff so they have a record. Right?
Right. Well, I've created a Google Doc, which we'll need to update with Dan's latest edits.
Yeah.
So we can just put everything in there.
Yeah.
And then that will be the canonical source. All right. Non-price competition. All right, so we have, these are not really projectable yet, so we'll have to figure out how to translate it into projects. Dan, so this is user-oriented policy?
Yeah.
And is this, to get to the conversation before, you just want to see what the range of policies are, or is it to try to look to see if policies translate into price, or into, well, I guess not price, into volume or something like that?
The issue is how easy it is to register the domain name within that policy.
So registration restriction.
But there's
a quantitative part we discussed before, which is you could compare the legacy GTLDs with the new ones,
right,
with respect to the frequency with which particular kinds of restrictions show up. And that's a...
But it's not just about the restriction. Generally, registration from how easy
So what would so what would make it easier or harder other than
quality of registration?
Yeah, can you give an example though of like what you think would change?
I know in CCTLD some registry that you even for scan papers for registered domain names. That would be a very complicated procedure, but
with a registrar.
Yeah, or registrar.
Yeah.
But I think every GTLD has automatic registration process.
And in some you have to meet certain legal requirements
right.
In Denmark.
Yeah. Because the GTLDs have a consistent, there's some consistent requirements. For example, being able to sell through registrars through a particular protocol, that's required by all GTLDs, legacy and new. And so from that perspective, this wouldn't...
But are there any differences between what's required of a legacy
Correct. So, for example...
Does that help them become more competitive?
Right. Yeah. Well, so I guess there's two questions. So I wrote it down as compare the frequencies of elements of registration policy. So that could be, so like the ONG and NGO, I think they do exactly what Dan just described. In addition to going through the normal online registration process, you also then have to like scan your articles of nonprofit status or something, like send it to them.
Prove that you're
right. So that would be an additional registration policy that's not required by any of the
Is there some place that staff or someone could look at their policies and extract from them these characteristics?
Looking at the registry
website. If it's documented.
If it's documented there.
Because like the registration policies are often just passed through
to the
RRA, which the registrar then presents to the registrar.
Or if you were to take .tk, as an example, which has no requirements, no limitations, no restrictions, no costs, no nothing, no quality, which has something like 25 million registrants, and I think it's the target. That's a base case for worst case scenario.
Worst case scenario,
that's what I mean. And then something that's very restrictive, again, that comes back to you should look at NGO.
Right.
Which is relatively restrictive because you could make some
restrictions. Kind of.
All right, so this is to inventory what the restrictions are. So I'm going to assign this to you just for you to come back and tell us what's feasible here. Because maybe you guys take a look and be like, we're not going to be able to do anything for you.
Well, I mean, I can do that. I think what I would end up presenting to you is there are different ways of looking at it. You could do it by looking at all the registries. Do you want to look at all of them? Do you want to get a sample? How would you want to construct the sample? I can come up with what my best suggestion is.
Yeah. Why don't you come up with your best suggestion?
Actually, let me suggest something. Whether you want a sample or not depends on how hard it is to get this information.
Right.
If it was easy to get, machine-readable form.
But it's just math.
I don't know how hard it would be for you to do it. I mean, suppose you had 10 of them. It would take a long time to extract these.
I don't know.
Take the 10 biggest, for example.
Right. Well, I think getting
some of them might be easier.
Getting them to come back and report on what
basically how hard it is to get the data you need to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then we'll see if things useful actually go through that exercise. Because it could be you'll say, oh, we can get it for 4% of registries, and it's not a random sample. It's just the one that.
Or they all look the same.
Or whatever. All right. So Lisa's going to tell us what we can, before we define the project, she's going to tell us what the project could look like. Dispute resolution policy. So this is just to compare CC, TLD,
and every GTLD has the same UDRP policy.
So URS is the distinction between the new GTLDs and the legacy GTLDs. So we could look at URS versus UDRP. And then we can also look at we could inventory that these things exist. Is there something we're trying to get out of it? Yeah, Lisa.
One metric we've been capturing is calculating all the URS and all the UDRP decisions by string, winners and losers, who was it, which size, and we have that broken down by all the different arbitration providers. So that's an existing data set.
Dan, are you trying to get it? Does this provide a competitive advantage or disadvantage?
Generally, all GTLDs have the same policy. So for me, there is some benefit for user if there is effective UDRP process. Most GTLDs have some sort of dispute solutions, but some of them don't have at all. So it would be interesting to know.
So this case,
but it's not just interesting to know. You have to look at it as, is this something that made the new GTLDs more attractive compared to the existing? That's the important thing that we have to look at.
Right.
It's not just the differences.
Yeah. For the users.
For the users, exactly.
So
So the question is, how would we that's the question I think, I don't know how to turn this into a project to answer that question, which I think is the right question. Dan, do you have any?
Put his name down.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So this is what I do, Dan, try to figure out how this could be quantifiable, the different competitiveness. Compliance rules, another Dan.
Another formulation for that, but my question was, which registries have specific compliance rules and what the difference is between them?
Similar to the user-oriented policy?
No, the first one is just about registration, but compliance rules is about different compliance within.
Oh, so like XYZ has like some security thing, and if you have malware on your site, they'll like turn off your domain. Like that might be different from other.
Yeah, data accuracy.
Are you literally saying that's safe for XYZ, or are you using?
No, I think they have like some thing that like crawls, figures out if you're bad. If there's something bad on your website, and if there is, they just turn it off.
Wow.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's what they do.
Like the Google right to be forgotten.
Yeah, it's demand to be forgotten. Requirement to be forgotten.
So I don't question. So just a table that would capture all this, all
data.
Those, basically, what I would think about it is the columns are legacy gTLDs and new gTLDs. Okay. And the rows are various characteristics. Okay. And you could say, well, you know, number 10% of the old guys have it, and only 5% of the new guys have it.
Right.
And none of the CCLDs have it. Okay. So, I mean, that's just a very crude measure, but it's basically the frequency with which this particular characteristic shows up in a gTLD.
Right. So you might have like policy. UDRP, URS.
Is that feasible?
Yeah.
Registration, fax in papers.
And if you want to worry about legacy problems, if you wouldn't have an infinite list. You would have the ones for which we could readily obtain information that
for the
representative samples.
Right. And this last one is privacy. Privacy.
Which registry has specific privacy rules and policy
and staff is already doing something about privacy policy.
Oh, we started to, and then we got stuck with that. We have 1,000 registries. Are we really going to scrape all of this? Is that what this team wants to use? That's why we stopped.
Right.
There.
Okay. So we'll have to figure out. This will just come back to like you coming back and telling us what you think you can reasonably.
On all of these policy related.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What about Liz? No, most all the new gTLDs are stick to WIS, so the WIS data stick. They all stick to WIS. They all have identical WIS requirements from ICANN. Some of the registrars do provide privacy services on top of WIS now. But the registries are all basically identical.
By the way, just what I'm describing is the simplest thing you could do.
Sure.
If you had time and for further research, you could try to explain the why some gTLDs have different policies.
Sure.
I'm not suggesting you do that, but you could do that. You could do a regression which is 0, 1 on the left hand side. But if you have it 0, you don't. And then you would ask what characteristics of a TLD. What explains the probability that a particular TLD would have a particular characteristic? But I'm not suggesting we do that, but that would be the next obvious step in this kind of analysis.
Yeah.
What would the peak be?
That could be on this table as well. Peaks could be on there. That would be if you guys already have the peaks.
In the safeguards. Group as well,
okay. Well,
second, how does it relate to known safe competition?
might choose security.
To go to a CLD that has, like, dot bank. Banks might, I mean, banks intentionally
so
choose dot bank because they have some
security and reliability, etc. Okay.
I think dot HIV has a pick that they have to give, like, other profit to charity or something. So you might say, oh, I want to register in that one because my money will go to a good cause.
And we have a separate research proposal on the case.
Okay.
And how to basically to look at whether or not those who do have picks, how they're adhering to them. And
sure.
It's a more qualitative analysis.
But you would presumably have to know whether
who
they
did
have
and didn't. Yeah, there's
so
some
data
that would feed into that.
You should also check the state for example, what they're doing.
Yeah.
Instead of doing the same thing twice.
Agreed. All right. And then the last thing on non-price competition is I had suggested to look at the donut study in particular, but perhaps look at this for other TLDs as well. What fraction of the time could someone have gotten an identical screen at .com or in a legacy TLD and instead chose the new TLD? Presumably they're choosing it for non-price reasons.
And sorry, presumably in that study it's all the donut strings,
I think it's just donuts, yeah. So it might be possible they could expand. It could just be that that's an interesting data point that we cite, or it could be that we could replicate that study ourselves. I put my name on this to follow up and see how we can translate that into something actionable. All right, competition amongst registrars. I think this is Jonathan's writing. This is also Jonathan's writing. This by region language.
Oh, yeah, I was just, yes, that was me. Sorry, I was just looking at the fact that we'll want to get, and maybe that is encompassed in the proposal, but being able to then dissect that by these market definitions that we were going to come up with.
Right, so I think once...
The answer may be true in one case and not in another.
Once we come up with our market definitions, we'll need to, some of these...
We'll get that treatment on others,
we'll
back
and apply to those market definitions.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we can start those, so like registrar competition, that certainly makes sense.
I don't know what they're right
market,
on.
Market share, obviously.
But I'm sorry to be stupid, but is competition amongst registrars not primarily based on price? I mean, the
doesn't seem that way based on the
it's really, as I said, it's really weird because the price is very all over the place. The question is, why does the guy selling for $50 have any customers when it's available for $6?
Yeah, exactly. And the registrar doesn't provide
exactly.
any additional benefits, does it?
But the point
well,
is,
they
do.
Often do.
They do
sometimes,
okay.
Yeah.
No,
a wide range.
That's what email services.
No, these are supposed to be raw prices.
Well, right, so they're raw prices, but GoDaddy, for example, will give it to you for free if you get website hosting services.
It's sort of bundled then.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's
but
for
yeah,
some of the, I think.
The or
thing
the
I asked,
switch. You get it free 1 year and then you renew it $100.
That's separate.
So the thing I asked Analysis Group to do, which I think they
I
didn't do it with
no, I asked them on the phone whether the differences price were the result of differences in sort of ancillary services, and he said no.
Yeah, so I think it is sometimes, but not always. Certainly the case, there will probably be some people charging $10 and some people charging $35, but basically identical product.
The thing that I found really weird is one of these sites, you look at it and says, this is the site to come to shop for the best price for your and then the prices vary from $6 to $50, and you say to yourself, well, if people are going there, how does anybody get to sell anything for $50?
Yeah. Well, I think people
maybe,
die of
maybe it's because it's an imperfect stuff.
This is a site that tells you where to go to look for the price.
Right.
Oh, okay. I think it gives you different prices.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it doesn't tell you about the other ancillary services.
These are supposed to, well, my understanding is could be wrong is that these are supposed to be just the raw price.
Well, certainly on
yeah.
on the domain prices site, like that's just listing whatever the
base
price that registrar will sell you, and that could include either no extra services or a bunch of extra services depending on
how
that registrar's behavior. But that registrar might not sell a bare domain. You know, Right, that might not be an option to buy just the domain name to register our food. So the price would inherently include more. All right, so I'm going to take this off, and instead we're just starting the ones of these that we think we're going to do our market segmentation with. Then additional things, Jonathan, compare pricing between single-string registries and multi-string registries.
Yeah, so I guess that, I
need... Registrar just... pricing question or registry pricing?
Oh, I guess it's registry, I'm sorry. I don't remember why I put it there, but I guess I was trying to see whether there was a difference in donuts pricing versus .club or something like that,
right,
where there's a difference in the either on the Stan mentioned collusion at one point. In other words, do I have a sufficient control over so many of them that I can keep prices higher on the one hand, or do I have an economy of scale that allows me to let them go cheaper because I'm going to make up the difference in volume, right? I guess I don't know how to interpret the data, but it might be interesting data to have.
If you do something similar to Stan, median, mean,
right,
top quartile, bottom quartile, for each, based on how many TLDs that particular registry operates. So,
right,
registries that have one, what's their median price? Registries that have two, what's their median price?
Right.
Registries that have more than 20, what's their median price? Something like that.
That's right. And I think we have the data to get to that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the donut group will have that data. Is that what you're asking?
Well, because we have a price list by
right,
registry, and we have an owner list by registry, we should be able to figure out essentially price by owner instead of price by registry.
Yep.
All right,
that's
fine.
What do you mean by owner?
By number registry,
registry operator.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, we'll have to figure out what the
market
is.
You mean basing that off the retail price numbers that we just received?
Right, that's right.
All right. In the is segmentation valuable, we have which registries have restrictions for registration. So that's just another.
It's on non-frequent.
I mean, it's somewhat goes in here too, but I'm going to attach it to our little chart that we're going to build.
Generally, this is strictly related to the regulation, who can register the domain name, is it?
Right. So this will just be, we're going to build this big table with various characteristics of each.
Is it closed registry or is it open for everyone? But that's
and there's a middle ground, too, which is it, so there's one that's like closed, like .google, you can only register if you're Google. And then there's, on the other hand, there's .xyz, which anyone can register. And in the middle, there's like .bank, which you can only register if you're a bank. So there's all these .brands, obviously, expected to.
That was the question.
But so I think we can capture that in this table that we're going to build with the characteristics of registries. And it will still be, can still help answer this question. Segmentation regulation for users / registrars.
That's mine.
You want to explain it?
Yeah, because my argument was that you have it as, is it valuable to consumers?
Yeah.
So there's the difference between the registrant and the users.
Right.
So for users, there's a great advantage to them if regulation is applicable to the registrant. So you have to know that the registrant is going to be following certain rules and regulations, and, like .bank.
Mm-hmm.
And for the registrant, the advantage also is you know you're competing only with other banks. I'm using .bank now as an example. So there are advantages to being able to look at those aspects for the consumer because we call consumers both users and registrants.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that was the idea.
And so what are we, what's the,
what are we looking
what's
at?
The measurement?
What's the rest of the same thing?
A greater,
yeah, that's fine. It's greater. Is it greater regulation and segmentation more valuable to the consumer as a user and less to the registrant and vice versa?
So do we figure that out through our surveys? And
yeah.
So your idea is that we would look at comparable questions in the surveys and payer.
So that we should be able to pull that out of
Yeah, and Nielsen has some of that.
Right. And do we have the comparable? So we know we asked roughly this question in the consumer survey. Are we asking a similar question in the registrant survey of do you think that restrictions are valuable?
I'm going to
check myself. Okay. We don't have that question, then we can't do the comparison.
Yeah.
Compare Nielsen survey. All right, so that was pretty easy if we have that question. All right. Benefits of choice exceeded. Oh, wait. And then I had one, which was to look at restricted TLDs and try to see what fraction of the addressable market that they were getting and compare that to some baseline measures like .com.
You could put that back on one.
Pardon?
So, back, you could put that back on one in a sense. It's another way of cutting up the data for one.
Oh, for this.
That one asked about
market share.
Like what's basically how much of the market was captured by additional market was captured by the new guys.
Correct.
And you're asking, well, maybe most of those are the unrestricted or the restricted.
Right. Right. Well, I'm saying, so you might look at .bank and say, oh my God, it only has 72 registrations. They say, oh, but there's only 100 banks in the world, so they have 72% of the addressable market.
Okay. Exactly. Different question.
Yeah.
So that's a good question.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. How would you do it?
You would have, so this you'd probably have to sample, and you would choose, well, you maybe not, because there's not very many TLDs with restrictions, actually. So for each of the TLDs with restrictions, you could get some measure of the addressable market.
Yeah,
presumably
exactly.
not by us knowing, but going some reference.
I'm sorry, just a little bit more detail, please.
So I would go, so in the case of .bank, I would find some resource that told me how many banks there were in the world.
You don't even read.
Or you could ask them, because they have an eligibility criteria, and they make you be registered with SIPC or something. You could say, how many banks are
in the world? Suppose I just discover that half the banks are in .bank.
Uh-huh.
Well, first of all, you have also the factor of regions and languages. Because you have to mix it with that. I suppose Chinese banks are not going to go to .bank.
You're jumping ahead.
But it's combined with that.
I think my question is
logical.
Earlier. It's a separate question.
Sure.
He's got this, assuming it's one big world,
yes.
Right? And he tells me 50% of the banks are choosing.
So then I would compare, and I would say, what is the .com or what, some other addressable market that I want to compare it to? I use .com as the baseline. And I say, what fraction of the addressable market does .com have?
Of
banks.
No, of the .com market is every
company.
Every, I don't know, we decide what it was. Every registrant, every internet user is a potential person to register in .com.
I thought you had to be a registered company.
No.
No.
No. Anyone can register
a .com. So I could be a .com.
So this would require you to know how many registrants each has, which you can know.
Right. Well, and then
you need a denominator
for
each of them as a reference point to get some idea of the fraction of the potential market, if you like, that they could be. I think .com's going to be kind of hard. It's going to get
I also said use that cat as another possible baseline. But whatever. We would figure out we'd compute some existing TLD numbers.
All right.
And then if we saw, so I would say if that bank got 50% of all the banks in the world, I would say that TLD succeeded very well in providing additional choice for its particular target.
Suppose that was 50%, and suppose you had .pub had 10% of all the pubs.
Uh-huh. And .com had...
Sure. I might ask a simple question.
Sure.
What do I do with those two numbers?
So I'm saying to compare to legacy TLD. So if .com has 8% of potential registrants in .com, then I would say actually .bank was
actually very successful. That's not really comparing to .com. You're basically saying the fact that they only have a small number of registrants doesn't mean anything because they have a very large percentage of those that...
They were going after.
Sure. I think a comparison to some sort of baseline
could
be interesting.
It's,
I don't know what any of these numbers are going to look like.
Yeah, no, I just know. The reason when I think about it in Bruton, I like to say, well, suppose the numbers came out so-and-so, how would I interpret it?
So if the numbers, if I found that the restricted TLDs were consistently getting at least as big a fraction of their addressable market as legacy GTLDs are getting, then I would say they have small markets, but they're successfully meeting the needs of their market.
So what's the significance of them being restricted TLDs? Wouldn't we ask that for any recursive thing, like Catalan, for example, is not necessarily restricted. Okay, so that's a bad example.
How about dot bar?
Dot bar. No, so I...
Or dot pub.
We could also try it topically, I guess.
Right. That's what
maybe that would be an interesting thing to look at, too, is to say the topical restricted one, do they do better or worse than the...
I don't want to make this more complicated than it is, but let's suppose there are three or four different domains that appear to, for example, try to register bars.
Sure.
They have a list of
public bars.
So it might turn out that none of them get a very large percentage, but collectively they get a large percentage.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, folks. I'm sorry. I have to interrupt. You're scheduled to be on a break right now. You're actually 3 minutes into it.
Oh.
The other team is already on our break, and we have to move rooms.
What?
Why? Because everything has already been publicized on the web to people to follow and...
I'm sorry.
Different
they're coming in here.
We're going
in there.
Yeah. I've already asked if we have the option not to do that, and I have been told no.
Why the meeting teams? Because of observers. There's
only
like two people.
But can't you tell the observers that they should?
There we go. Mono observe this, do that.
But they're remoting into the same.
Maybe they
go to different rooms.
But just. Dial into the room that we... They're not dialing into, like, this phone. They're dialing into a bridge, right?
I actually have... I have a proposal. They work on our projects.
Yeah, exactly.
We work on theirs.
We're not obliged to do the break.
We're almost... Let's get through this
faster. I think it's being recorded.
Right. Unless there's a limited resource to break...
Take your name.
Don't go anywhere.
We're staying here. We're going to finish this, and then we're going to take our break.
Right.
And then we're going to, during our break, we're going to tell the people that we're staying in this room.
We just need to do that before they move in.
Yeah. Well, you can just lock the door.
I have a key.
Oh, no. It's the men's room.
I have a key.
Well, it's lockable from you. All right, so let's get through this quickly so we can have a break. So I don't know the answer to that question yet.
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems an interesting. I think you're right that somebody's not a failure if they have a small number of registrants, but nonetheless have a very large percentage of the market they were really aiming for.
Right.
Like dot cap.
Okay, I think it's
kind of. But that's hard. Now that I've said that, it's hard to think of a metric that will permit you to compare a good outcome and a bad outcome. Not impossible,
yeah.
But not easy.
But again, comparing to legacy, even if it was all the ones that are defined as bars, in the aggregate, how are they comparing to COM in the space of bars by BSP?
COM's going to have a huge denominator.
Yeah.
We can.
And O'Malley's is going to be a tough thing to discover as a bar.
We can take .edu or
right.
We'll figure out
we'll
the
figure
appropriate
out.
Legacy baseline.
Right.
But we could take some legacy TLD and use it as a baseline. All right. Now we're to cost versus benefit.
Popped in my head up. You don't have anything specific on brand. TLDs. Is there any reason you might want to look at brand TLDs to answer that question?
So I think in general we've decided we don't care about ICANN taxonomy of TLDs.
Okay.
So unless someone has a specific question from a consumer perspective that I'm trying to address, then.
Well, excuse me, the only thing we could do potentially is take some of the brands and see if they have switched from brand.com to brand.brand. And that would show also whether...
This might be a benefit of
exactly.
choice.
Right.
Are dot brands...
Let's say Buchanan is the brand.
Richard Lee.
Richard Lee?
Yeah.
His brand.
There's not Richard Lee.
Is there?
Yeah.
How many registrants? One?
There's a guy named Richard Lee, and it's for him.
That's tough to compare on price, though, isn't it? Because that's more money than it even would have cost in the aftermarket, probably.
He's the chairman of the bank, and the bank registered it, so that people wouldn't defend his... I don't know. You read the description, it's like, our chairman is not Gus' reputation, and I must be able to promote his...
It's Richard O.I.
Yeah. but anyway, so our dot brand providing
migrating to the new GTL.
So we can say one fraction of dot brand TLDs are, I guess, A, in use, and B, canonical, right, as the primary place.
Yeah,
with respect to B is very, very, very low, and A is still probably pretty low. Part of the problem is most of the dot brands haven't even gone live yet. Right? Like they haven't even delegated.
Yeah.
How many are in use? Not just like having pick up, but
right.
Like actually having.
Or you have contact us.
And then B, what fraction are canonical?
Well, of the handful that are delegated and have been in use.
Correct.
Look at those.
Yeah.
We don't have to look at.
I mean, the study could say this fraction, like these people. Part of the reason why many of the brands have not delegated yet is because they just got them codes.
And it's a future research activity.
Right. Well, the actually, which is always has a brand registry group on this that looks pretty interesting. It's still kind of challenging the number of people in which brands are using them, how they're using them,
right.
How many pages.
Right. So I guess my point was the reason why many brands are waiting right up until the last possible moment to delegate is because they don't really have presumably. Okay, so have the benefits choice to the cost. Ask IP owners about defensive experiences.
Just a side here.
Mm-hmm.
There were earlier on various studies of the extent to which the same brand appeared in multiple domains. I think four different studies. But for example, somebody surveyed 1,043 brand names of the Fortune 500 companies, found 100% were .com, 76% in .org, 84% in .net, 69% in .info. And so the point is that there's lots of instances in which the same brand appears left of the dot in multiple domains.
Right.
They're also in a lot of
CCTLDs. But in fact, people have actually looked at this.
Yep.
This is not a new subject. And presumably this is doable using the same methodology these guys use.
Right, you use the same methodology. So this is frequency of brand registration across.
It's actually called trademark registration.
TM registration across multiple fields, across new GTLDs.
In fact, a couple of these studies were done for ICANN.
Okay. Dan has studies.
Well, I have citations. So I have case, I couldn't get the study.
Okay.
But mostly they're available on the web.
Okay, and separately from this, so one thing we could do is do that, and that would give us a quantitative view of this, presumably. Another thing we could do is go and ask.
So we've talked about getting INTA, in particular, to do a survey of its members about what they've spent defensively. It's not just defensive registrations, because there's also blocking and other things that are defensive in nature that don't necessarily result in a...
This is like a corporate registrar survey.
Yes, I mean, a trademark registrant survey,
right?
Trademark owner registrant survey, because there were obviously a lot of numbers thrown out when the program was coming out, and everybody sort of perceives that those numbers didn't come to pass, but there's obviously big blocks, donuts selling, triple X are selling, et cetera, where people are doing blocking, and so getting a sense of that cost, we may not have another way other than asking. what the costs are. And so we've talked to them about doing it. They've talked about surveying, and we've even talked to them about helping at least to pay for it out of our research budget to make it happen sooner.
Okay. So who seems like we need someone to drive the creation of the survey?
Well, this is Aliza. We've been working with Lori Chan and Karen, and Karen and I have both been working.
And in theory, David Taylor is our liaison.
Yeah.
To Insta.
Okay.
So even though he's not part of this group.
Another cost that I had flagged was how much fraud is enabled by these utilities. I assume that the other group is like the already.
I think, yeah, exactly.
So I'm going to just put a placeholder to see what they're doing. Or we commission our own work. Benefits. Two I flagged earlier. Is it easier to get domain names? That might be something useful. Registrar survey, I don't know.
Generally, or the one that you want? What are you asking?
Yeah, like if you're a registrar, you like compared to 3 years ago, if you went to buy a domain name, it would be easier or harder than. I don't know how we're going to quantify that.
I thought there was a general question in the Nielsen study on how easy it was to register domain names. Wasn't that the first thing?
Yeah.
It may not be as specific as what you were looking
right.
at, but I
Well, the problem, the problem is just like we're not going to have the baseline before the program we compare it to. So maybe my question is up. I really have no idea how we get the baseline.
We did ask the question, how would you describe the processing of registering a domain? Very difficult, so much of it. This was, we did a comparison last year.
We did too. We
have
to do
that comparison.
That was the registrant survey.
But so you're just asking just generally, as opposed to getting one that, like the amount of, again, speaking from my own anecdotal experience, I've got a new business, and very often what I feel like is I'm going to end up naming the business based on what domain I'll be able to get for it. It's a very interesting exercise that before even naming the business, I'm going to go out and see what I could do domain-wise. And so that varies dramatically in time expense. Potentially, but then and now, because the options that are available to me for business names have completely expanded.
My question would be, I guess, the real question that I would like to ask 3 years ago and today would be, on average, how easy is it to get a domain name or satisfy them?
Right, that's what I thought you
would
be asking.
That number moves. So I like the idea of the question. I have no idea where we would get the baseline. You know?
I mean, unfortunately, the survey is probably the only place, but my hypothesis is that it is, in fact, easier because when I go and look now, the number of suggested alternatives is much greater than it used to be. In other words, just the sheer volume of, we don't quite have the one you're looking for, but that variation. So some of that's technology, probably,
right.
But some of it is also just the number that are available.
I just don't know how we would actually quantify it. But let's look at what the Nielsen number may be the closest thing we have.
And there are questions in there about how satisfied are you.
Usually just to provide, it's like this is, you know, when he's in, like when we were
Like when we were at the ICANN GDD Summit, like we had a session on premium pricing, so I registered premiumpricing.how and I registered registrybilling.how, and those are just easy, like when someone says, oh, where's that document? I just say, go to this thing.
How many do you own?
I don't know.
So on the question of registration, we had a metric we are tracking.
Mm-hmm.
At looking at how many strings are there that replicate at second level, replicate across numerous CLDs, and what is the percentage of that?
So that would be like the defense.
Right.
Like
yeah.
The
trademark.
And then it's, the question is, can we filter that on trademarks somehow?
Right, yeah.
So
that would have the strings, but it's numbers.
Right.
If we could produce that, it would be.
Right. That's the other piece of this. It may be not before the break, but I mean, it's probably worth going through the competition and choice flagged metrics to see how they translate into these questions. Because obviously we didn't have these questions when we were designing metrics,
right.
But we may have just inadvertently come up with metrics that would help to answer some of those questions.
Yep.
Well, maybe so. I'm just...
All right. So the registration growth. So I said look at total GTLDs before and after. GTLD growth versus CCTLD growth maybe as a proxy to see if new GTLDs is. Which will get captured by your
capture over there.
So this would require a different numerator just looking at CC.
The CCTLDs have certainly not increased overall. I think isn't that at least
no.
That certainly from the center. They've either stayed static or grown very, very.
Domains.
We don't have any way to measure.
Domains, yeah, the domains.
Yeah,
and
in GTLDs what? For sure, and
probably
emerging
GTLDs. No one counts registers.
Domains.
We count names. We don't count individuals.
I mean, it would be good to count individuals. We just don't have any possible
individuals.
Mostly due to who is friends.
At least amongst the center group.
This is one guy who registered 40 million domains. His name is GoDaddy Privacy Service.
Okay.
And then also look at GTLD growth versus internet users. I think that might be another
potential
problem. But try to look to see if, like, if these have helped the uptake of domains.
Exactly. I think that would
help. GTLDs. All right. Real increase in choices. Number, language, local, regional, and cost, phishing, spam, security. Okay, so cost side, I think we've decided that we're looking at the other
two. That was mine.
And then the real increase in choices, what did you have in mind there?
The real increase in choice, I think I was meaning, for example, if you are going to use .thank,
mm-hmm.
you probably have to be able to read .thank in English.
Right.
Or at least in Latin letters.
Like this.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and
right.
So it falls into six, but it's also related to five, because you talked about the benefits of choice having exceeded the cost.
Right.
So there are linguistic costs, regional costs, et cetera. You want to use a bank in India when you live in, I don't know, Washington, et cetera.
Right.
And that's, I think, a bit too esoteric.
Yeah, do you have a
project?
A project?
I think I decided to do
something.
Just
a brush.
You have nothing to
avoid. She just walked herself completely out.
Come on, write up the description.
I have something there that might.
Yeah,
is the TMCH reducing the cost of possible DDRP cases? Could we get that from the.
I think so.
So, right, but so I think in order to answer this cost versus. I mean, this is like the. To Jonathan's point, this is basically, like, earlier today, Larry said, like, this is basically what you're trying to answer, right? So this obviously has to incorporate all this stuff from the other group
in order to... But I have another idea.
Yeah. Okay.
Now that I just struck me. Would the benefits of choice also relate to the cost of application, for example? So the benefit of new TTLD owners exceed the cost that they have incurred?
So you're saying one of the costs is the cost of
setting up the application, the process itself. I don't mean just the financial
cost. All the...
Everything that goes, the whole baggage.
Sure.
That's perhaps a better way of looking at it.
I think we've been expressed interest in the past of better understanding the registry's cost. So we should find out if the other group's trying to answer this question already.
Which question?
Is the TMCH reducing the cost?
We think that they might be.
We think they might be addressing this already.
How is it connected to their role?
They're looking at safeguards, which the TMCH is.
Consumer protection.
So let's ask them before we ask the other group. Right. it's not a defensive, opposite of the
right,
defensive.
Exactly.
Right?
It would be more the outgoing, probably.
Right. The outgoing to other TLDs would be more of a sign that...
potential sign that it's defensive, right.
Right.
So we do have a question in the registrant survey that is, of the X number of domains you registered, how many are in each of the following categories? Current, redirected, used for an active website, actively used for some purpose.
All right, we're almost done.
Oh, it's not empty.
Okay.
Take an extra 2 minutes.
We're almost done, Dean. 3 more posted. Okay, do consumers have expanded choice? So in the registrant survey, are we asking if registrants in various languages and regions view relevant TLDs as being expanded choice? So it's like, oh, you speak Thai. Here's a Thai TLD. So it's having this. We have to figure out how to ask the question, but does the fact that you have a Thai TLD expand the, is that a viable choice for you?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's any questions like that. Let me another look at the survey. Survey of registrars or websites. Is this currency covered? Oh, registrars' websites or their websites. What currencies and languages are supported? This would just be of the registrars, which of them support which languages and currencies. And then lastly, look at registrants and users per region / language.
I'm sorry, can I just go back for a second?
Yeah.
I suggested it before a table, but that's the sort of comparison across categories, SUSE TLDs, GTLDs, legacy GTLDs, and we asked. Question then was, do they have these particular characters?
Right.
Isn't this another row in that table?
This is registrars. So can you, if you're in Thailand, does someone take baht and have a Thai one? Is there a registrar you can go to?
Right.
Will you pay in baht? And
so you could do the same format as the other table. You could simply compare, well, are you doing it by region or?
By region and or language. So it might be more interesting of like, if you're in Thailand, how many registrars will take baht and how many registrars have a Thai version of the website? If you're in,
so question is how many local registrars have their domain?
How many registrars have local support for your language and currency? And there might be a third question: how many in region?
Or resellers do this because that might be where you see it.
Yeah,
it'd be a lot harder to figure out.
Right. Or resell it, yeah, only possible.
Yeah.
And then shouldn't we also, I mean, we must have this somewhere. Shouldn't we just look at the new GTLDs that are in new regions and new languages by definition? I mean, there must be. Anything that's in Chinese characters,
mm-hmm.
by definition, is limited to those who understand and read.
Well, right, so
Chinese.
this particular question is targeted at registrars, so we can get to that.
No, exactly. I think
yeah.
That's my question.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm
okay.
Just trying to figure out,
okay.
Do we have something actionable? Where we, so we could, someone could go look at all the registrar websites.
Looking at me.
What?
They're looking at me.
Sorry, wait, tell me you did what.
So it would be for each language and currency. Is there, how many registrars provide support for those things? And the third question is there a registrar, how many, for each country, how many registrars are present in that country? Legally present. Legally present.
Well, this source, I think the other source says, this tells me, this is a particular domain, but you can do it for any of them. Tells me which countries have some registrants.
Yeah, but that's a different question.
But
if you speak English, and if
no,
you highly speak English, you can use some website.
Oh, okay, so.
But excuse me, the registrar doesn't have to be based in the country in order to.
Yeah.
No, that's a separate question. Maybe you, I would. Maybe
you
I.
Ask if they're based in the country.
Because maybe I only want to do business with a local company.
But it sounds to me like that would be very hard data to get.
So the. You would have to go to each registrar's website and look at it.
I think that would be very hard.
That would be challenging.
Painful.
It's a huge and
something other than
the
product you
don't
have.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to quit just
exactly.
And
painful?
It is painful, but also are the results. Are the results? Is the cost
my daughter's name?
So the answer is probably not. For the reason why is because of resellers. Because even if you found that there were zero registrars that were
still, there could
present,
be the next layer down.
There still might be ways to buy domains in that country through.
I actually vote against it just because of data requirements, which is too hard.
Yeah, I agree. It seems very hard. So
we
we're proposing to not do this project.
No,
and I'm going to
suggest
one down.
We have a sort of a backwards way of figuring out which registrars offer ID on the second level. So that's kind of an interesting question of asking that and what percentage it is.
But it doesn't necessarily mean, like Google Domains will perfectly happily let you register as IDN at the second level, but it's only in English.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to use English in order to register your Chinese.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. So it's...
All right, we're going to take this one off.
Okay. Not a great question. Not a great answer to the question.
Yeah. Too hard. All right, so now we're to Megan's, the last post-it, which is Megan. Do you want to explain this?
Well, I can't remember what I wrote, but I think
at registrar / users per region, language less than new GTLDs launched greater than.
So I think it's what I was saying before, that of the new GTLDs, a certain number are in IDN,
mm-hmm.
and a certain number are by definition regional. Let's take .Berlin,
sure.
for example. It's by definition regional. Those in, I'm going to use Chinese as an example, are by definition limited to those who either speak, read, or use Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And by comparing those to the existing legacy TLDs and CCTLDs, we can see if those have increased choice for consumers, by definition.
So I think this is roughly what we're trying to get at through our market segmentation discussion. And we're segmenting by language, region,
geography,
and topic. And so we'll basically say, like, if you're in Osaka, like, what are your possible choices now? And are you likely to register in .jp or in .osaka or .asia or in
.com? And we have some of that from this DNA study that you sent there on as well. Didn't you send this to me?
Yeah.
Someone did.
Yeah.
I don't know where I got that. But it already says some interesting things about use, for example, of headlines.com, headlines.in, headlines.info, headlines.news, headlines.mumbai, headlines.today.
Right.
So I'm just taking this as in India. And show the percentage use of those according to where they were, of which three of those are new.
Mm-hmm.
The others are either CCTLD or legacy.
Right. So we could we could use that data and do another survey like that. Right after the break, we're going to talk about our segmentation. That's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really good segue to that conversation. So we're going to take a short break.
Are we moving?
I have a proposal.
No. We're not moving.
Let's not move, because I bet you
we're not moving.
We're not moving.
We're
good.
We talked about it.
Because it's good. Because let's test how many people complain that they're in the wrong room.
So I can count 9 in here.
Do you want to go back into the meat locker?
We have only 38 minutes until we're reconvening. In the
over there. Okay. Yeah.
So we're going to take 10 of those 38 minutes.
Make it 8.
Take a break.
So at 4:32,
we'll reconvene here to talk about market segmentation for
okay.
A little bit.
Don't
give
too many
times. Pardon? Don't give too many times.
No.
Someone has left these.
Hey, do you want to post? I thought they were yours. I was going to take it.
Yeah.
I've been eyeing it this whole time.
9922-2256-5325-651. That's not what I said. Nine, two, 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 five, six, five, three, two,